Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 541. My name is John Morgan, and Cole Coffee is with me here in Las Vegas after the quick jet-setting trip out to Los Angeles / Orange County. We'll hear all about it, so you could check in on the private workout with Khamzat Chimaev over there. Saw the workout footage in the interview. We'll hear about all that. But first, of course, we've got to talk about the biggest news in mixed martial arts right now, the thing that everybody has stopped down and is discussing. That is right. Kyle Daukaus is back in the UFC. That's right. Now, listen, I'm being a little silly, of course. It is big news for us around the CFFC family, of course. But just wanted to give it a mention right off the top because Kyle, so happy with that guy. He's just the dude, you know, had a shot in the UFC and kind of admitted maybe wasn't necessarily 100% ready for it, or maybe didn't necessarily understand the gravity of it, you know, and made some mistakes in his approach, et cetera, et cetera. And came back to the CFFC, former champ, jumped right back in and was like, listen, guys, I'm happy to be here, but you know what I'm trying to get. I'm trying to get the UFC. Give me every fight. Give me the toughest people you can possibly find. Like, literally did not turn down anybody. Did not even, when names were mentioned, like, here's what we're thinking and here's the date that we're thinking. It wasn't like, yeah, I don't know, man. I'm kind of thinking about this instead. It was like just absolutely. Did have to withdraw from a fight, and he was, you know, disappointed that he had to do that, but was always very clear and open, and you know, just communication was good. So anyway, the dude is a legend around CFFC. 8-0 in his two different stints. 4-0 this time around. 3 stoppages along the way. He's a 2-time champ, and now he's heading to Shanghai, China to face Michelle Pajeda. So. Excited for him. It means we lose our main event on August 30th, so we're trying to, you know, we're having to shift around the card a little bit, but I think everybody in the organization was more than happy to do so because it was like, man, that guy has busted his ass and deserves to be back. Not an easy matchup either. Michelle Pajeda, man, that's a challenging guy, right? A dude that you kind of, I feel like you kind of never know what to expect from Michelle Pajeda. Like, he might be a world beater. He might be the scariest dude that's in there, or sometimes he kind of has some off nights or whatever, but happy for Kyle Daukaus. And cool that he gets to – I was kind of a little bit torn because, like, cool that he gets to travel to China, but also, like, it's a long-ass way to go for a fight, you know what I mean? It does kind of interrupt your sleeping patterns. It does kind of interrupt your preparation and all that. I know that, again, he wasn't going to say no. He wasn't going to turn down any opportunity. In fact, if you've noticed for the past several months, anytime there was a single middleweight opening that would come up, as soon as it was reported, he was like, me, send me, I'll go, and he meant it. So anyway, happy for Kyle Daukaus, a single member of the CFFC family, back into the UFC.
And what's nice, I mean, we see the UFC, you know, revisit guys that go out and show themselves, and we've often seen it with, like, the Contender Series. Guys will come, they're like, go get some experience, go get some wins back, and come back, you know, like, almost like, prove to us again why we believed in you the first time, you know, or something like that. So we see guys come back, and so the fact that he went out, did some things, became a champ, you know, and then worked himself back to a position where the UFC's like, hey, I mean, let's give him another shot, you know? And if you're willing to answer that phone and say yes, that's ultimately what they need a lot of times too. A lot of that boils down to, are you available and are you willing to do this right now? You know, and some people want to have the perfect storm, you know, they're so worried about, you know, they know what it means that if you get that shot and then you lose it, you might not get it again. So everybody's probably like, I want to have the perfect thing. But if you've been there and you've done that and you know, like, hey, you know, this is your shot to come back. I mean, we have guys that were coming back for the darn contender, the Ultimate Fighter.
I know.
You know, like guys that were legit, you know, willing to come back and take on the guys that never been there just to get a shot at the show again. So, yeah, I mean, good on him to have proven it and got back in there. And good on the UFC to not write off these guys. You know, they've always said that, you know, they don't want to bring the aging champions back or the aging guys that are at the end of their career, but they want to get guys that are still active and still actually look like they have career ahead of them, you know, and Doc is 100% is one of those cats.
Absolutely.
So that's pretty cool.
Still just 32 years old, and to your point, man, he accepted every fight that was offered for him. I know that, you know, he volunteered himself for many situations along the way, so very, very happy for him. Obviously, we've got a number of guys with CFXC experience coming up on the Contender Series as well, so we'll certainly be pulling for those guys and wanting to see our CFXC crew make it to the next level, but Kyle Daukaus gets the call right back into it. As you said, a second stint in there. So really, really happy for him. So good stuff there. All right. Now, we will be talking about the UFC event this week. Certainly, you did not get a chance to attend Media Day. I also did not get a chance to attend Media Day. But I did watch the videos that came out of it. And I'll definitely talk about that. I definitely want to talk about as well the changes that were made at the ABC meeting down in New Orleans. Of course, some changes to the scoring that people need to be aware of. And we'll talk about that. But I guess first, I wanted to hear from you about your day trip out there yesterday to Southern California for the Khamzat Chimaev Open workout. Certainly something we don't see a lot of these anymore, really, whether it be in town or somewhere else. I don't want to say it used to be routine, but I felt like we do it a little bit more frequently than we do now. But this was one that came up on the UFC radar. They made the perhaps odd decision of kind of program their own media day in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit weird because I know it was basically everybody that would have been at the Apex, including yourself, made the trip out there. But man, it seemed like a pretty cool experience overall. It was at the Jackson Gym, which I've seen a lot of them, you know, doing big things with Rampage Jackson, obviously hosting their podcast out there. But just kind of watching your guys' footage and seeing the whole thing, seems like they got a pretty badass setup out there. I guess it was Orange County is where you were.
Yeah, Orange County, because I couldn't tell. You know, I am the worst when it comes to geography or whatever. So like the guys were asking for the post, like, hey, we want to put a locator, city locator. So they're like, we just want to make sure it's in Newport Beach. And I was like, yeah. It pulls up on the map, and I asked one of the other guys there. I was like, hey, is this Newport Beach? And they're like, yeah, or Costa Mesa. And I was like, no, you know, the thing says Newport Beach. But was oddly enough, when I took the Uber home, literally, I felt like I just drove a mile down the road on the way back towards the airport, and then I started seeing Costa Mesa stuff. I was like,
well, maybe we
Where are we? You know, but I mean, but that's a lot of times too, you know, and then just down the street, we're passing the Orange County Fair. So I was like, or would people call this area Orange County, or is it all part of Orange County? But you started hearing these names of these geographer, you know, these places that all these Cali people are so proud of, you know. Remember there used to be the show The OC?
Of course.
You know, and all this other stuff. And I was like, wait, was the OC part of Costa Mesa? Or was it in Huntington Beach? Or is there a whole other area? And I'm just like, I don't know. I mean, like,
that's a rabbit hole right there.
Yeah, I am the worst when it comes to LA and around that area, but I know those people are very, very particular. You know, you tell somebody that lives in like Venice Beach, you can tell them that they live some other part, and they'd be like, no.
Very territorial.
Yes.
Very like, territorial.
But yeah.
Your zip code matters.
Yeah.
Your zip code matters.
So Huntington, Newport Beach. I was going to say Huntington Beach. That I really get some, whoa. Newport Beach, but yeah, it was deep. But yeah, the setup was incredible. The facilities that they have set up, the studio that Jackson and those guys use.
You walked away pretty impressed, right?
I was really impressed with the setup. And then nice workout stuff. I mean, like, you definitely look like if you were going to come train and you wanted a private gym to get some serious work in, have everything that you needed, it was there. It was a full-size octagon, the one that Connor used to train in. Had mats and heavy bags and other stuff off to the side, and then it had some machine exercise stuff and dumbbell stuff that you could
use.
Were
they just borrowing that cage? Because Connor's back in the pool now.
Oh, that's true. He might buy it back for a premium, maybe. Maybe that was an investment. They're like, bro, we'll sell it back to you, and we kept the canvas for an extra as an extra bonus. We will flip the canvas back over so that your graphics are back
That's
upwards.
That's pretty funny. That's pretty funny.
But no, the place was impressive, and the people that were there were as nice as can be. I was really, really impressed.
Do we know how Hamzat got hooked up with them? Was it them just reaching out and saying, you need a place to train? Like, come here? Because I didn't really hear that discussion. I don't know if they're sponsors of his now. Or...
It could be that or just connections with something, but maybe whatever. I'm not sure if that came. I don't even know if that came from Armin. Maybe I had a connection or something because Armin showed up and we got an interview with him. But yeah, I'm not sure how that connection worked out. I mean,
that's pretty cool seeing Armin Sarukin around too. Like, I was actually thinking about that because I know he talked about that in the interview that, hey, I didn't ever really expect to become friends, but we become friends. You know, Armin, maybe not necessarily the greatest training partner for Hamzat when you're preparing for Drikus Duplessis, right? Because the massive size difference and that's not going to replicate. But as far as just the mindset, the knowledge base, just, you know, having somebody that's living the same life you are or whatever. I mean, that's a hell of a bonus to just kind of have around there for Hamzat.
Yeah, and granted, after watching these training partners get kind of manhandled yesterday, nobody wants to be grappling with Hamzat right now. His grappling was incredible. I mean, and one of the guys, I mean, it was, I had to double check his name to make sure it was Albert Duraev.
Right.
And like, bro, some of the techniques that Hamzat was giving him the credit that he showed him some of the techniques on the ground, but when it came to like his oppressive, like, dominating just his nonstop thing, like, you could see where the guys were like, okay, like, let's stop. And then he just kept going, and there's a point where you could tell they were just like, ugh. And then when he finally got tired, then they kind of chuckled and laughed like, dude, that's just like, this is crazy.
It is nuts. It's
it changed a lot. I mean, like, the coach and even everything said, like, they're like, how Hamzat is right now is completely different when in terms of like physicality, like this time off has done well. And so either there's the stuff that he's working on. I know in the past people are always like, he was go, 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 go. But I felt like in maybe one or two of his last fights, I felt like, okay, he's human. People are able to kind of weather the storm and then they push him further on. To see guys, you know, that just his movement and just how strong he looked, I was like, wow. Now, granted, you know, Drikus is just awkward and in his striking is unorthodox and just comes with weird shit. But in terms of if Hamzat gets a hold of him, boy, that fight changes a lot.
It's really interesting, right? Because, I mean, Hamzat, one of the most interesting careers ever, right? Just storms into the UFC and everybody's like, oh my God, this is the guy. Like, start giving him two belts now, right? Then the illness and then the travel issues and all those things. Has the return in 2023 against Usman. Gets the win, but a lot of people, you know, rightfully said, man, if that fight would have been five rounds instead of three, bet we're getting a different result. You know what I mean? Then he comes back against Whitaker, and it just absolutely smashes him. And again, maybe not necessarily the cleanest of technique ever, but just brutality and obviously the nasty teeth being pushed in and all that. But then, you know, we didn't really get to see the lengthy tests. You know, had the cardio improved. So I think all the people, when they bring up cardio, and not that I see Hamzat get pissed about it, but like, I think they're all fair questions. I don't think they're unfair questions of like, oh, you're just making stuff up or looking for something, right? But I did kind of wonder, because number one, watched this training. I watched the full training that you guys had. Great to see. And you're so right. They're just kind of out there flow rolling or whatever, but like, it's like his understanding of positioning and body weight and stuff is insane.
Yeah. And there were reports where you could tell that they were trying. Nobody wants to get dominated in front of cameras nonstop. It's one thing if you're fight week, they're 2 days out, and you don't hurt a guy. There was a couple times where I saw some moves where guys really grabbed, almost like a diving sort of like grab on an ankle, where it's like, bro, if he didn't move his ankle and if you shot this wrong, you could have hurt him.
Or a couple places where they're like, he's holding them down and they're stuck and they just start laughing because they're like, I can't get away from you.
It was just like, they were going. You could definitely tell, like, it was like, there was a point of where they were like, I want to get up. Because at one point where one guy did, he was like, ha ha, I got on top. And then Hamzat immediately rode him. And then he was like,
So good.
It was hilarious.
It was fun to watch. So Pat Downey, of course, was supposed to headline UFC BJJ a couple weeks ago. He had to pull out because of an injury he suffered in training camp. Yep. I kind of joked on the air, we were pretty stupid to book somebody that was training with Hamzat Chimaev to compete. But it was funny because in talking to Pat before he had to withdraw, I mean, he was just so, like, appreciative and just so respectful of the great. He was like, dude, this dude is on another level. He's like, and the whole camp's on another level. The way that they handle things, everything's top notch, first class, whatever. But he's like, but that dude on the mat, you know, the stuff outside is cool, but the stuff on the mat is unbelievable. So it was fun to watch that. And then it's fun to watch the interview as well. And I mean,
he was so quiet and so like reserved.
So this is exactly where I was going with it, right? Like, it's clear, and he talks about it, parent now.
Yep.
You know, people are watching me, my own kids included, plus youth from other people. They see me, they want to be like me, so I got to be a better example. But it did just seem like a guy that, look, as you get older, you mature a little bit, right? And you calm down a little bit. But it did make me wonder, like, does that maturity translate into his approach in the cage? Like, his demeanor is more calm. He seems more like, not that he's not putting effort in there, right? But everything just seems like, whereas before he was just like, you know, flexing and everything's got to be like, like, I'm going to kill you. You know, that was the line, right? Right. So, like, I wonder if that will translate into, or, you know, will it translate into the cage where it's like, hey, we know that he's going to be able to pace himself a little bit better and not exert all his energy, not feel like I have to smash you in round one because I have 25 minutes to attack. Or if you can try all that and you can say all that, but then as soon as the bell rings, like, you're still that guy you've always been.
Yeah. I mean, if anything else, I mean, like, I think his fight style when it comes to, you know, if he sees an opening, I think he's going to push hard.
Yeah.
You know, if anything, I think they probably trained for the fact of, like, we can't have you burn out at round three if you're going nonstop. But if anything else, maybe he's just dialed down some of the outside stuff so you're not wasting energy on little, like, the stuff that doesn't even matter. You know, like, when you're walking out, do you need to be jumping around, you know, high-fiving everybody, blowing a lot of energy just with an adrenaline dump right at the very beginning, or do you just keep your head down, you walk out, you know, you do your thing, you stretch, and then you save it all for the cage, you know? Maybe there's little things like that, but when he did, the part that really got me, or where you could see the mental change was, it felt like he's really thinking about, not legacy is not the right thing because you always think about legacy towards the end of their career, but in terms of there are people watching this, my kids watching what I'm going to be saying to you, somebody else is going to look at it, and this is living on forever. Do I want what lives on forever, what I say in this very moment, to be that thing that's going to get put up in my face when somebody wants to show it? You know, like, you know, he brought up a lot of other things. You know, you could definitely tell where his thought process, he had really diagnosed some of these things, and especially when it started to get to the point of White House talk and how people are using politics. And a lot of times, you know, people can't be held accountable for the people that they maybe know just because they happen to be fans.
Sounds like storylines we've been talking about for quite a few years when it comes to Hans Eschenbach.
I was like, okay, you know, I felt like somebody had some talks with you about, you know, addressing some of these issues off to the side, you know, like, you can't just ignore it. You can't whatever. They're going to ask you about it. These are the sort of things you need to talk about, you know, and give these talking points, you know. So whereas in the past, maybe he would have flew off the rail, or maybe he would have just been like, eh, whatever, you know, like something. Now his answer is more clearly, well, you know, we can't always, you know, why do you want to bring politics in with the sport? You know, a lot of times we can't control who we meet. And if we meet somebody or whatever, blah, 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 why do we have to address the politics side? Why can't we just keep it with the sport, you know?
And honestly, I mean, I think that's, like I said, we smile because, like, I think it's, we've both talked about over the years, you know, and I love the way he laid it out. He's like, look, dude, I'm a sportsman. This is how I support my family. You know what I mean? Like, so am I supposed to either A, stop doing what I do for a living, or what, B, like, renounce my country and my nation and where I'm from? Like, how's that going to end up for myself and for my family and all that? So it's like you're kind of put in a weird spot. I did crack up, you know, and I really did. It's funny that you pointed out, because I did like the way he handled all that, when the political talk. But I also did get a crack up when they were like, so what do you think, you know, be on the White House? And he just kind of laughed, and he's like, bro, look at my face. He's like, you think I'm going to be on the White House card? And I was like, you know, that's fair, Hamzat.
Yep.
That was cool, man. It was good to see. And, you know, kind of addressing the doubters. I did like the one thing he said, too, when he's like, hey, who else is undefeated in my weight class? You know what I mean? Criticize me all you want. Say what you will about my skill level, but who else is undefeated in the weight class? So, dude, I'm fired up. I mean, we'll talk about it next week. This is one of the best fights on the schedule right now.
And I think he sold me.
Yeah?
You know, like,
ooh,
it's tough. I mean, like, I like DDP. I like whatever. You know, I like his striking. I like his resiliency. I like how he just somehow pulls things out. But, man, there was just something so oppressive of watching him just exert that grappling, that you know at some point he's gonna get a hold of DDP.
Yep.
DDP needs to keep it separate and needs to be able to strike him. He needs to hurt him. I just don't know if he's gonna be able to escape from all five rounds. At some point, he's gonna get a hold of him. And if he does, how good Khamzat looked. Granted, maybe if I watched, DDP grappling and seeing him getting escaping and see if he's dominant, but man, I'm telling you, Khamzat is the real deal right now. I don't think it's just a matter of like, hey, they're just hyping this guy. I know the other day I was just even thinking, I was like, man, this guy hasn't even been fighting. We haven't seen him. He's fighting once a year. It's always over in Abu Dhabi. It's not like away from home. It's always like home court advantage. Right. But if he's looking this good over here, he's doing the right thing. He's training over here. So it's not like he's just going to come in here and, get acclimated, fight week, and then try to go. Like, the dude's doing the work, man. And, like, I don't know.
Again, it's hitting mitts and striking. But even if striking, like,
It looked okay.
It looked okay, and it generates power without insane exertion. You know what I mean? Like,
and I don't think we got to see the best. I could tell he was warming up, but he was hitting a little bit more at the very end. But at the very end, I'm editing my thing, so I start going because I know I had a deadline, and others started editing. I think at the point, they were just like, okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's enough.
Yeah.
This was a media workout. This wasn't like, hey, guys, just come while we do our workout.
Right.
I felt like he did work, but I felt like by the end of it,
you're not going to put in your game plan stuff.
Yeah, he was building up to it, but the power that was getting there and movement, because at first it definitely felt like what you would see of somebody warming up for their very first set. Maybe like they hadn't seen the coach in a week or whatever. Like, it wasn't like the crispest. It wasn't like whatever, but it started getting there towards the end, and I had enough. I heard enough, and I was just like, okay. But so I didn't want to judge purely on his striking, but I thought his striking looked okay. I wasn't like wowed. It wasn't like when I watched Illy and I was like, holy cow, that was a great open workout. Yeah. I didn't get that. Yep. I didn't get that vibe. But I got like, hey, he's got power. But it was the main thing is like, nobody's going to think Khamzat's going to go out there and just bowl over somebody with just his striking.
Right.
His striking is just setting up.
That smothering
just
grappling.
Setting him up to get to the grappling,
It's like, and listen, and this is coming from somebody who's a fan of Dricus Duplessis. Again, people can criticize his style and make fun of it and whatever. But
you see a couple times where they tried imitating yesterday. I think I put some of those clips. At a point, there was a bunch of stuff I didn't throw, and I just had to grab some clips and put it. I was like, I can't give you a great workout on it. I got to be at check in, and I have to board in like an hour. I was like, I got to go.
Got to go.
I was like, because if I hit traffic, then I'm screwed, and then I'm like, I didn't want somebody to be like, well, why'd you miss your flight? I was trying to make the best end. I was like, I'm going to give you this. I'm going to stick them together, and it's going to be enough that you're going to get the gist of it. That's why I kind of try to frame a little bit wider on some of the stuff as opposed to try to go in and out and pick like shots that I knew I'd be getting for an edit. I was like, just let it go as is and just give people the taste and then get the F out.
No, 100%. I thought it was good. Seeing everything was good. But it's – so, you think about it, and if you're like, hey – I know that Khamzat is going to fade. I believe that Khamzat will fade more than Dricus. But if I know that Hamzat's going to be at 90% in round two, 80% in round three, 75% in round four, because I think the way everybody sees it is that, like, weather the round one, maybe weather part of round two, and then Dricus is going to absolutely take over because Hamzat's going to be dead exhausted. And if that's the case, Dricus is going to win. You know what I mean? But if he can just maintain a little bit, not 100, I know you can't go at that speed the whole time, but if he can, like this more mature approach, I like what you said, you don't necessarily have to be mean mugging all the way out to the cage. You don't necessarily have to be, you don't have to sit on top of the cage if you don't, I don't know, you can do whatever you want. It could be dangerous. I'm excited about this one.
Yeah, if DDP's training isn't, if he's not being pushed as hard with like, because, it's not like, Hamzat's the only guy that's going to be tired from these grappling exchanges. Like, DDP's going to get it as well, Like, for DDP to really wear him down, he's going to need to hurt him with the striking as well. Because what I saw, a lot of the practices that Hamzat's doing is that nonstop two or more multiple people, nonstop for more than 5 minutes, oppressive. He's not going to tire from doing that for five rounds. It's going to have to be the other stuff. So is DDP doing the work where he's being oppressed for that much time, long, nonstop? It's one thing, again, when you're like, you're training with a guy and it's like, he's going to go a little bit hard, but then you work, you're separated, and I let you separate, and then, oh, you strike me, and now I'm going to grapple again. That's one thing when you're working with somebody that's trying to let you do your work.
Right.
And then there's another when a guy's like, okay, I'm going to really try to grapple you, and you have to work yourself out of this and keep doing that stuff, and then see how tired, because I think people think that only Hamzat's going to get tired. If you have somebody grappling like Hamzat is, when I watched his training partners, literally were like, when's he going to stop? When's he going to stop? You know, like, and I mean, it's good. Drick is going to get tired too. And if you're tired because your arms are getting spent trying to lift up, you know, his arms when he tries to do a takedown or something, you know, when you're fighting those arms when they're like, get an underhook. And then they're trying to pull up and you're trying to pull up. Like, that's tiring. Mm-hmm. And it's tiring. And it's just like, then you think you're just going to strike like your arms aren't being affected. I mean, it's going to be interesting. It just depends on who wins that initial control of where the fight, the bulk of those rounds take place. If they take place in a clinch, they're both going to be tired. Then they're going to tell who did the work.
Yep.
You know, then the cardio and that exhaustion, then they're going to know. Because if Hamzat has guys that are tiring out after a few minutes and then it gets to that third round, and DDP's like, no, I still got more. You should have had more training parties. You should have had a fourth and a fifth. Like, let's go, you know. But that's the kind of stuff I think we'll see. I mean, I think if people are like, oh, man, Hamza's going to go up there and smash this dude, and he's going to knock him out in the middle of the octagon. That's not going to happen.
I don't think that's going to happen.
You know, it's only one side of the coin is going to have a better chance of happening. That's DDP. Hamzat's going to have to do it with just that war of attrition, you know, and just getting in there. But, man, I was thoroughly impressed with his size. He looked like he's a big boy, man.
Big dude, man.
And then just to see him just manhandle, because like Duraev,
I believe.
He's a big boy, man. And he was just tossing him. And the other dude that he was training with, I don't know the other guy's name, he was tossing him. And I was just like, man, I was thoroughly impressed. I mean, maybe it's because I hadn't seen him in a minute. But you know, who knows? Maybe I'd see DDP and I'd be like, oh, man, never mind.
Change my mind. I'm going back. Too, he's, you know. Yoked up,
he is. He is as well, you know. And I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you carry a lot of muscle. You carry a lot of that fitness. You know, like that's why some of those big boys tire out. You know, because they're carrying all that extra stuff. So
I tell you,
be interesting to see.
I can't wait for it, man. I tell you, so UFC next week, big pay per view in Chicago. World MMA Awards will also, the voting will be open next week. So we're kind of like going through the final details and just making sure all the T's are crossed, all the I's are dotted. Are we missing anything? Had a funny exchange this morning, just all the talk about strength and conditioning and preparation. Had it. So somebody brought up in the trainer of the year category.
That just falls under trainer, right? They're not breaking it even further down.
So in the trainer of the year category, somebody brought up, hey, who does Merab Dvalish really work with as a strength and conditioning coach? And I was like, I don't actually know. They're like, because, I mean, you think about him, he's on a different level. So whoever's behind him, they've got to know something.
I don't even know because I don't know if he goes somewhere outside of like Syndicate, because Syndicate I don't even know has like a strength and conditioning.
So I reached out to Danny Rubenstein and I was like, hey, odd question. I was like, kind of reviewing some things for awards and that sort of thing. Who does Merab Dvalish really strength and conditioning? And he was like, he doesn't have one. Think about it. The dude with the most insane like cardio conditioning in the world, in the sport, like, doesn't even really have a strength and conditioning coach. He's just like, nah, he just does stuff on his own. He's like, in fact, if you wanted to nominate him as trainer of the year, you could probably put him as trainer because he trains himself.
That's a lot of it comes down to just pure athletic talent.
Isn't that crazy?
And then just getting the reps and doing the work, you know, like, you know. I guess you kind of credit, you know, the head coaches and stuff for putting them into,
of course,
you know, different positions to do it. But I mean, these are the same guys that are like, we got to tell Merab to like stop. He wants to go extra rounds. And we're always like, stop. You know, the guy's just athletically just like, just very, very gifted in that aspect. But just makes you wonder how good he would be if he actually had somebody helping fine tune.
Yeah, like, is there more?
So that,
like, is there more that he hasn't
like,
unlocked?
That he's like peak, so that it would be peaking for fight week, as opposed to you know, maybe tiring because he goes too hard. In his mind, the coaches I think are doing a good job of like having him pull back because they realize that you can't go 100% nonstop. You have to somewhat pull back. But it would just be interesting if I had somebody that was actually strengthening them. and wild. Really, working
I hadn't even
on
considered that. Can you imagine? I'm sure he's gone through the battery of tests and everything with the PI. But can you imagine if they like ran some numbers, like, you know, we found out you're only operating at like 80% of your potential cardio max. Like, what?
Well, remember, like when everybody freaked out when like Jones was just like, yeah, no, I've never really worked out with anybody. And we're like, bro.
What? So crazy, man.
What are you talking about? But, I mean, genetic he's another freaks. One. It's just genetic freak. I mean, both of his brothers were, like, football players. I mean, like, just strong. You have everything in there. And it's just to think, like, all it takes is, you know, somebody to actually give you a proper, you know, strength and conditioning, you know, schedule so that you're peaking at the right times and that you give yourself time to recover.
Because those guys that are broken down to a science, like they have the body broken down to a science, like exactly when it should be recovering, when it should step up with it, you know what I mean?
Which is surprised that they don't – I'm surprised a guy that's so close to the PI that maybe he's reaching out. Maybe he is getting a little bit of stuff, but it's probably him just getting his own thing. Hey, what do you think about this, you know, as opposed to somebody just laying it out? Maybe it's ChatGPT or something.
They're probably, you should take a rest day. And he's like, nah.
Nah. Well, I did. I only did 14 sets today. Oh, you know?
Crazy. I thought that was a funny little side conversation. So look out for the World MMA Awards nominations to come out next week. Voting should begin next week.
I'll get my suit ready.
Should at least come hang out. Like, let's at least go have a few cocktails.
Yeah.
All right. So we will talk about the UFC this weekend, but I did want to nominate. It is big news. A little slow to get published everywhere, and it'll take a while, but it is worth noting that down at the Association of Boxing Commissions, they did pass language about new scoring of it. Eric McGracken, who is always kind of up on regulatory type affairs, was the first one I saw posting about it, and I think actually he's the only one that has the document on his own website. I don't even think it's on the ABC website, at least as far as I was looking just yet. Quick note that it will take a little while to get this approved everywhere. This is the only thing that it sucks kind of about the ABC, the way it's all set up, is that like they'll pass something, but then all the different commissions have to pass it in their own way, and they have like state guidelines and state regulations. Like for the NSAC, not that big a deal. I bet at the next meeting they'll just be like, hey, we want to adopt the new policy. So voted? Yes, so voted. You know what I mean? They have monthly meetings. They take things quickly, but some of them they need like – there's some states that need, like, state legislature and all this weird stuff, and it takes a while. I wish – I've never understood this. I'm sure there's a legal reason why. I don't understand why your state couldn't just have a thing that says our rules are whatever the unified rules of MMA are, and when they change, ours change instantly because ours reflect what they reflect. I can only imagine that's just because, like, the states do want to have some control over it or whatever. Yeah. Like, they don't want to just turn that away to be like, oh, we – you know – but it would just seem to be way easier. But anyway, if you want to check it out, I know right now you can find it at combatsportslaw.com, which is Eric McGracken's site, and you can see all the language itself. I won't sit here and read it all to you. But what they've done is to really just kind of simplify everything to try to make it easier on the judges and try to make it easier on commentators and fans and all that, just to simplify it and to really emphasize the use of damage as – what you're measuring, right? It says, you know, judges will evaluate the relative effectiveness of each fighter in each round using the follow three prioritized and interrelated constructs. And damage is right up top. There was a time in the unified rules where they didn't even mention the word damage because I think there was like, I think everybody was concerned, you know what I mean? You wanted, I mean, don't forget, we're not that far removed from the government saying that mixed martial arts shouldn't exist, you know what I mean, and having to fight states for legality. And so I think there was always some very much concern of like, well, we don't want to put the word damage in there because that seems like it's more violent than it is. But that is the most effective, you know, most effective measurement. And it says right here, damage is the most highly valued component in judging a round because it's not an action but rather a direct result of effective fighting. So you're including knockdowns, heavier concussive legal strikes, legal strikes that force the opponent to retreat or readjust, looking at things like swelling, hematomas, lacerations, bruising, grappling that hyperextends joints or causes rotational damage, chokes that cause visible distress, so you're battling your way out of it. So damage is number one. Then you get to dominance and duration as the measures out, but damage is number one. And there's also some talk in it, and a couple things. Number one, in going 10-8, you got to have damage. That has to be in there. So no longer, you know, you used to have the talk about the 3Ds, and if it was dominance and duration, maybe there wasn't enough damage, but we can at least consider it because, hey, the guy did take you down at the start of the round, and he did dominate the positioning for 5 minutes. So he had domination, he had duration, but he really didn't do anything on top. So is that a 10-8 round? No, it's not a 10-8 round. It's significant damage has to be a part of it. So that kind of should not alleviate 10-8s, but just to make it clear, like, it's got to have damage in there. You've got to do damage.
So you're saying they won't be giving 10s unless there's damage?
10-8. They won't do a 10-8.
Oh, unless, 10-8.
Yeah, they won't 10-8. Do
10-8. Gotcha.
So before you could say, well, there wasn't damage, but there was duration and domination, so that's enough for a 10-8. Now it's like, no, it's got to have it. It says, and just to read you a part of it, a round will be scored 10-8 when a contestant earns the round by offensive actions that may include dominance and duration, but that must include significant damage resulting from effort or attempts that by their implicit nature could finish the fight. So it has to have damage. And the other one, I thought this language was very interesting that they put in there as well. And we've heard that this is kind of the directive given behind the scenes, but it talks about the use of 10-10 rounds. And it says straight up, this score is generally reserved for use in partial rounds. And this language is strong. Scoring completed rounds 10-10 is seen as a failure to adjudicate a score. So if you're a judge and you watch a full 5 minutes of action and you cannot tell who won that round, that is a failure on you, not a failure on the athletes, or, you know, just a weird round. Unless it's a partial round. Like, you know, you're going to have those weird ones. There's an accidental foul 12 seconds into the fight. How am I supposed to judge that? That's a 10-10. But they're saying if you watch a full 5 minutes and you can't determine who won that round, you are not doing your job.
Interesting.
So I thought that was interesting.
So say you're on top of somebody, and you're doing a little bit of damage. You're doing some damage. You know, you're staying busy, and you're almost 5 minutes. Say in that last 10 seconds, they throw a shot from the bottom, and it happens to hit scar tissue and splits a cut over your eye. You know, and you're like, it's enough to kind of just then boom, then the bell rings. Do you even that round, or do you still give it a 10-9 because the other person was doing some damage but was on top, but you took the worst what looks the worst in terms of damage? They might say, oh, well, the strikes on the ground while they were doing whatever, I don't see the visible damage like that cut over the eye.
Well, here's, and I'll read you the language. A round will be scored 10-9 when a contestant earns a round by offensive actions greater in degree and effectiveness than their opponent. In the rare circumstance when the judge is unable to discern an advantage, only then can they utilize an advantage in aggressiveness of fighting or an aggressiveness or fighting area control. So in that instance, you're saying a lot of tiny damage added up versus one big shot that sliced you open and that sort of thing. I might say at that point,
position and control.
I might say at that point, that's when I go to position and control. Like, yes, technically your one shot on the bottom did the most visible damage, but you even laid the caveat that it was scar tissue. Not that a judge would know that. You know what I mean?
But if they're like, wham, that one shot from the bottom, like, it's like when
Nick Diaz was fighting and he started bleeding, you know, or like Marcus Davis back
they're
in the
like,
day.
Bro, he hasn't even hit him.
Like, yeah, come on, man. We know. Yeah, he just wiped it across it. He started bleeding. So in that instance, I would say, and again, I'm not pretending to be the expert here. Yeah. I've always wanted to go to like one of the judging seminars, but I never really had time. Now maybe I do because my schedule is a little bit different, but I would like to do that. But I would say at that point, that would be the instance where I would go to, well, you were on top the whole time. You had the takedown. You were controlling everything the whole time. So even though we're even on damage because I had that one shot on the bottom, the top fighter, that's the 10-9 winner now.
Yeah, I would think so.
So anyway, so a little bit more just damage being emphasized. And again, it's going to take a little while for all this to, like, for instance, it's passed. The UFC could use this weekend. I mean, Nevada is pretty good about saying, we're going to approve that and we'll get to it next week. So we'll see. Maybe they do. I think it's a little fast.
Yeah, I think it's a little fast.
Yeah. And especially knowing that they don't, because I think after this, right, am I right, we don't have another show here in Las Vegas until the pay-per-view in October, right?
It's quite some time.
So at that point, then you could just say, well, we'll just go this one weekend without it, and by then we'll have our next month.
Yeah, October 4th.
Yeah,
because we got the Alvarez Crawford boxing on the 13th, but outside of that, so yeah, the next commission hearing's in 2 weeks. They're already supposed to talk about Strickland, and I think there's somebody else's stuff going on that's going to be on that one. I would think if anything else, they don't have a PDF of the agenda yet, so it is still quite possible that the acceptance could happen on that one. But yeah, I wouldn't see it happen.
Yeah,
you know, for this week.
I think there was it.
Because I think they want to put their own spin. Because they just recently, I think, just did some clarification on their own. Maybe
I think
that was somebody else.
I think the one they did before, if I remember, and sorry, I should have been more prepared, but I wasn't even thinking about this question. I think the one that they did before they had a meeting was the eye poke rule. Remember when the ABC came up with, hey, eye pokes now get 5 minutes, whereas eye pokes used to not get 5 minutes. It was only back in the day, it was only growing shots that got 5 minutes. And then the ABC was like, no, let's give 5 minutes to eye pokes too. Let's also make sure that the doctor knows.
The doctor has to
don't
come
rush
in.
Them.
Yep.
Give them a minute and a half. Give them a cold towel. They can have that. I do believe that the UFC said we're going to adopt that. I can't remember they had on a probationary basis until we have our meeting or whatever. But that was one little tiny tweak where this feels like more of a thorough definition. So
yeah.
We'll see. Something to pay attention to on the broadcast this weekend. Because I don't know, a lot of people – I mean, look, last week people were talking trash. We had a really good card. This week we will see how it pans out. I did not get a chance to see all of the Media Day scrums because since you were not there to stream them live, nobody was streaming them live. But I did get a chance to check out the main event replays. Preliminary, or I guess the rest of the main card.
I mean, some good fights.
Sorry, because right before I got here, I got a report that my dad is in the hospital, but he's doing okay.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, he's doing okay.
I guess that's rough.
Some blood pressure, but my wife was just texting me and asking if we should tell our son, and
of course
that got to me a little bit. I don't know. He's like, I'm 50-50 on it. I wish I would have seen that right in the middle as we were talking here.
Yeah.
It sounds like I'm knocking on wood. It sounds like he's okay. I still have both my parents, man. So it's hard. But she's asking if we should tell her son, and I don't know if I should.
Saying this is completely off topic, but I mean, like, your kid's not a baby anymore. He's
true.
And I mean, like, he just saw him at his birthday. I mean, I would think, what's the harm in telling him, like, hey, Pop's just getting a checkup or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
As opposed to saying, oh, you know, I don't want things to get worse before you finally say, oh, Pop's in trouble or whatever. Just, you know, I would say tell him because I think he's old enough to understand. And if anything else, maybe he wants to reach out and just check up on himself and give him a call.
Just give him a little check-in.
Yeah,
and
be like, hey, you know, hey, Pop, heard you're, you know, whatever. Just checking, whatever. But I vote on that side, but you do whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, we were, you know, sort of talking about this card a little bit. It's a good card. I mean, when you look at the guys that are involved in this one,
it's a good matchup.
I mean, right from the get-go, Eric Anders and Christian Duncan, that's a banger.
Yep.
I mean, that is a good fight. And then right above that, Miles John, Gene Matsumoto, that's a good fight. Andre Fili.
Come on.
I mean, right? Like,
Angela Hill, not sure how much longer she can keep doing this. But
well, don't you dare say that.
I didn't get to see if that got brought up yesterday.
There's no way in hell probably that got up. I didn't watch him. I haven't watched any of them, but I guarantee no media.
So for anybody
that
knows.
I wonder if she did any media members fit checks.
For anybody that knows, she posted to social media that media stretching to get ready to ask a 40-year-old fighter about retirement.
I forgot I was going to stretch beforehand because we talked.
We were like, if we're at media day, we're going to get up and stretch a little bit. I think that would have been funny. Hopefully somebody did. But funny because, look.
If we told Armando, I bet he would have did it.
Oh, yeah, it would have been great. Angela Hill, a little good ribbing. Look, we've had many great interviews with her, great fights there for years and years. I certainly didn't take it personal. It was funny. And then Steve Ursig, Ode Osborne. I mean, Ode Osborne is never in a boring fight.
Ode.
That means a lot. Oh, I got to love that. The late addition of Cody Brundage, Eric McConico, Gabriela Fernandez is back against Julija Stolyarenko.
I forgot about the late addition of Brundage in that.
Dude, there's a lot of good – there's Elijah Smith against Toshiyama Kazama. That could be a fun fight there.
It's a good fight card.
It should be a lot of fun.
There's more – well, I'd have to look. I think there's – in terms of some of the ranking, there seems like there's more ranked guys now, but maybe that's because there's the Tapology ranking. I'm seeing a lot more rankings. Toshiyomi Kazama, number 67. They didn't usually have that shit before. If you're not that high, they don't have all those numbers. But now you got all those numbers.
Are they putting them next to them on the fight cards as well? I didn't even look at that.
Yeah, on the Tapology fight cards, I'm seeing all the things. So like Elijah Smith and Kazama, number 57 versus number 67. Julius Walker, number 30 versus number 37. I'm pretty sure I can't remember how high they went up before. you got Gilbert being a number 71.
That's funny. That's cool. Good on them. By the way, I like the fact that they're doing this. I'm a big believer in Tapology and what they're trying to do. And
yeah, they did this. They've been working on this for a long time.
Years.
Long time.
That's interesting. Oh, so Cody Brundage and Eric McConico, they're listed as unranked, but that must be because they're ranked at middleweight and they're fighting at light heavyweight.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't even notice they're fighting at light heavyweight.
Yeah, I think just because it was short notice.
Short notice.
Yes, they're fighting. Wow. But then why would – oh, because Usyk and Osborne is actually at bantamweight as well. So, yeah, that's exactly what it is because those are both flyweights fighting at bantamweight. I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't realize that was a bantamweight. No, I think I did realize that. I'd forgotten about that. I didn't remember that was a bantamweight fight, but that must be it. So it's interesting that they wouldn't show their flyweight rankings instead.
It's pretty cool, though.
But no, I love it. I love what they're trying to show the numbers.
Oh, maybe, man. I'm just thinking about – maybe I'm overthinking it now that all these new – because
trust me, because I used to – because I use their numbers internally for us at CFFC.
They didn't go that high, right?
Well,
I'd see like 40s or maybe –
well, so they would have like all your regional rankings and stuff. But once you fought for a major organization, you were ineligible for their regional rankings or whatever.
Yeah, these
are new. So, yeah, that's why you're seeing it in there. I like what they did. And I know, look, there were some people that were shooting holes in it when I saw that come out. The Tapology rankings immediately, they're like, oh, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
There's no rankings that you're going to come out with that everybody's going to go like, 100%. That's perfect.
You know? I mean, I think your clarification is good, too, because if somebody looks at it and they're like, why does it say unranked?
Yeah.
Because that's not their real weight class. That's there should almost be a clarification now. It's like, what do you mean it's unranked? You know, I know that guy's ranked. He just fought for titles not too long ago.
Yeah, I'm almost surprised that they don't. Because even like the UFC, when somebody fights out of their division, they'll put their ranking, but then they'll put like a little notation that like, you know, FW or BW, you know, like it's a different division. So I'm a little surprised they don't do that.
Yeah, they should put like a little asterisk or something there next to it and then down below say something like that, you know, fighting out of their normal weight class or something along those lines.
100%. So, listen, I think it should be fun. I will be there. You'll be there as well. So I'm looking forward to it. Like I said, I did check out the main event. Was interesting and listen to the guys because, first of all, Roman Dolidze and Anthony Hernandez both have very similar kind of approaches to the sport themselves in that they're like, look, neither one of us, you know, they said it separately, not together, but they're both like, not a big social media guy, not a big rah-rah guy. And so because of that, I think they're a little bit – Roman came out and I thought he had a really interesting part where he said, look, I thought both me and Fluffy both deserved higher-ranked fighters than we're getting. Now, don't forget, these two guys were supposed to fight. It is interesting here. So they were supposed to fight last year in June. At the time, Dolidze had lost – 2 straight fights. Mm. Now he's won 3 in a row. Meanwhile, Hernandez had won 5 in a row. Now he's added 2 more. He's on a 7-fight win streak. I think a very quiet 7-fight win streak just because he's had so many like canceled fights along the way. Like his consistency hasn't been there. So it's 7 fights, but it dates all the way back to 2021. But he's on one of the longest win streaks in the division, if not the longest win streak in the division. So the fight is probably actually more enticing now than it was when it first came together. But Roman said, man, I kind of feel like we both deserve like higher-ranked fighters. And I kind of don't disagree. The middleweight division, and it's crazy because we're talking about we got this awesome middleweight title fight coming up next week. But the middleweight division does seem like it's kind of in a rut right now at the top where you just got those same names up at the top. Now, you know, Hernandez, I think if you were going to criticize him, it's simply because, you know, he's had so many injuries and had to withdraw from fights and that sort of thing. So they've struggled to really put his schedule together to help him go up the ranks a little bit, right? But then, meanwhile, Dolidze, he had a couple of key setbacks. Like I said, he lost 2 fights in a row. He lost to Nasruddin Imavov, who, of course, has shot up the ranks since then. He lost to Marvin Vettori. He got that one back. But I think, you know, those two results were kind of holding him back a little bit. Now, I think the winner of this one is going to get a big chance. But it does seem like, I mean, you've got Khamzat that's introducing his name in the division. Imavov is kind of the newest one up there, but, you know, you got Strickland, you got Adesanya, you got Whitaker. You know, they've just all been around forever. I guess you got RDR now. That's kind of their name. So I think they're in the middle of this. I think they're in the middle of this churn right now, right? Like that happens, right? Where you get 4 or 5 names that are clearly the best of the division, and they just sit there for a while.
That's what I even brought up the other day. I was like, man, we got Izzy still sitting up in the top spot. I was like, you look at who he's beat and who he lost to, and it's just like, but does that mean you just drop him down just to drop him down? But, yeah, I mean, there's definitely some names up there that, you know, I think some of us are clamoring, like, why are they still there? Because, yeah, it does feel like – so I'm sure it's – if we're noticing it and feeling – I'm sure the fighters
When he said that, I thought back to literally that exact conversation where you're like, why is he still there? But you realize, oh, man, he's had a heck of a run along the way, you know?
Yeah.
So.
But they're right there. I mean, like, you know – for them to say they want to fight higher. I mean, win this and your next fight is going to be
one of the ones.
That, like, there's nobody left after this. Like, this is it. You know, after this, you are fighting the dudes that are right there, you know. So whoever wins this is putting themselves in a really, really good spot. Might even be at the point where they might get that Izzy call.
Yeah.
You know, like, Rainer just fought recently, but I mean, I think Izzy and does Cal have a fight? But I don't think anybody's really clamoring to fight that dude. If anything else, I think they might. I could see where they might be like, let's get Whitaker, you know, even though Whitaker just fought recently, but, you know, out of sight of those, some of those guys at the top, like, it's.
He has Imabov in Paris, right?
That's
a big fight. Yeah, that's a big one right there.
That's the one.
So that's a good one right there. You still got.
Jared.
Yeah, Jared Cannon. You know, Jared got MVP, right? He got the weird MVP fight at middleweight.
MVP jumping way up there.
Yeah.
He's not even ranked in the UFC rankings.
Because he's not even ranked at welterweight anymore, is he? I don't think so.
I don't think he was ever ranked in the UFC rankings, was he?
No, he was at the bottom, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's 15. Still number 15. Still number 15. Yeah, he was definitely in there.
He must have just made it in there.
But yeah, he's moving up to middleweight, so that's interesting. And then you got Brendan Allen, of course.
Jump the line, bro.
Yeah, he did.
You jumped the line. Like, but I mean, like, with good reason.
Yeah,
I mean, like, the dude's a superstar.
Get the most out of him, right? Like, you know, you don't have a lot of fights out of it. You don't have a lot of fights left out of him, so get the most out of him.
Makes sense.
So anyway, I think this is big. I mean, again, the winner, as you said, the winner of this is going to come out in an interesting position. Again, RDR is up there. You just talked about the matches that we have. Brendan Allen, you know, just had a win. He like somehow. So I think you're going to start to, you know, you're just feeling the turn, basically, I guess, right now at middleweight.
You should just prod him then. Like, after the post-fight, and just be like, hey, you know, I see Izzy up there kind of waiting for somebody. Why don't you call out or something?
That's funny. But then, you know, it's interesting. Like, so that's when you get to an interesting position, too. Like, if you're Israel Adesanya, no offense to Roman Dolidze and Anthony Hernandez, right?
Yeah.
But it does get to a point where you're just like, I don't know. Does that get you off the couch?
Me.
Yeah, does that get me off the couch?
For him. Yep.
I know. You know what I mean?
And that's the tough part about the division.
I don't mean that offensively,
you know?
Right? But when you get to a point in your career where you're like, I don't need the money.
Yep.
I want to fight, but it's got to be something that, because, like, if I compare it to John Jones, people are just going to be like, no, I hate John Jones. But it's the same thing where it's like,
Yeah. I mean, it's easy.
Does that mean he's scared of him?
Yeah.
No.
I mean, it's easy to see who the A side is and who people are tuning in to see, you know, and at that point, you know, you're just like, I stand to lose everything. Like, what is there for me to gain except for just holding on to a position and getting a payday? You know, like,
that's it.
This is not exciting. But at some point, I guess, to maintain your spot, you have to fight to hold that spot, you know?
Yeah, you do, because I'm telling you right now, I mean, look, I always keep the last 3 years right in front of me. In the last 3 years, Izzy's 1-4. You know, I mean, the losses, Imabov, Duplessis, Strickland, those are the people that are right there in front of him, you know? The win over Alex Pereira is big. Alex Pereira, of course, has left the division. But, yeah, pretty soon. I mean, I have RDR right behind Adesanya right now, but he could easily slide right past him, especially with another big win. Whitaker is behind him. I think Whitaker has to stay behind him, even without recent results, just with the history. But Kyle Bohio, if Kyle Bohio beats Imabov, he definitely jumps past him. You know what I mean? So, you know, I don't know what Cannonier, if he beats, you know, MVP, I don't know what that necessarily does for him, other than it'll probably be another really fun fight.
Is Strickland even tied in with anybody right now?
No, Strickland's got to get his deal with the NSAC cleared up. I know. You know what's
they're literally going to say
slap on the wrist.
They're going to say by this time, they're going to say, even if they said 3 months, 6 months, is going to go back to the time when it happened. So, I mean, he'll literally be able to fight.
End of year.
Yeah. Or way before that. That would be if they give him like 6 months or something.
Yeah.
At this point, they give him 3 months. It'll be done like next month.
Time served.
Yeah. It's like,
whatever. I don't think it's going to be that much, man.
You know, because at that point, you know, when they let,
Sorokin?
No, fuck. The other guy that laid hands.
Chris Curtis.
Jeez, right. Why am I blanking? They let Curtis off with nothing. Like a little verbal, hey, don't do it again, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Did they even fine him?
I think they fined him. I don't remember the exact, but I believe they fined him. But if you go back and watch, he did storm the cage, and he did kind of grab a tie clinch, but luckily he didn't throw any punches.
But I mean, when it came,
and he kind of blocked.
But then at that point, it's like where you say, okay, well, Strickland didn't actually make contact. He hit Curtis's thing, so he didn't even hit him.
You've been saved by your lack of accuracy and Chris Curtis's shoulder.
So at that point, when it's like who actually touched the fighter, you know, it was more Curtis than anything else, you know. So if I would say, you know, somebody should hop on that public comment and just say, hey, I noticed that Chris Curtis, who went in there as well, you know, was able to get off a little fine. I would think at this point, you know, if you're going to levy any punishments to Sean Strickland, make it be monetary only and time served for what has already happened or whatever or something.
Let's say it was just a reasonable fight. Obviously, the fine amount would be small because they take into account the purses somebody made, right? So they're not going to be like, well, if we were going to fine Sean Strickland $100,000, we'll fine this guy $100,000. Yeah. Like, he made $700, bro. Like, what are you talking about? Yeah. So let's say it's not a UFC fight. The UFC doesn't need to book the guy. You know what I mean? What would you give at that point?
PSA and time served. And then
3 months? 6 months?
And then 6 months seems really, really long.
Months.
I would say 3 months. Maybe they want to say 4 months, so you actually see 2 months of suspension on the thing.
Yeah.
So I would say roughly 3 to 4 months.
I agree.
They could try to do a PSA. That's not going to happen. But like, I think in context, they could say, you know, 3 or 4 months, and then that's it.
And then
legal fees, $157
and whatever. $157.25 or whatever it is. Like how do you come up with these rates? That's what trips me out when they come up with the rates and it has, like, cents on it. Like, yeah. Bro, just round up. Like, yeah. We're good.
It's ridiculous.
No, that is interesting because, you have to do something. Now, had it been a situation where, like, you storm the cage and then people are trying to pull you off and you're just shoving them aside and won't be restrained and continue, you know what I mean? Like, you just continue, because it was a moment, you know, moments happen, but it was all contained pretty quickly. And I don't,
once somebody got in the building, them, it was done.
Yeah, and we were in the building. I don't think anybody felt unsafe in the building, because that's another thing, right? Like, I know that with the whole Habib situation, like, I remember that was big, because, like, I remember, if I recall, it was the governor who was right there and was like, you know, it was right unfolding in front of him.
Yeah.
He felt, all, you know, like, oh, this public safety, and that is real, right?
Yeah.
And you got people, but that wasn't the case. They weren't spilling into the crowd or anything. So, yeah, like 3-4 months.
Yeah.
I've heard people say, like, oh, I bet he gets a year. I'm like, no. There's no way.
That'd be super extreme if because you got to take into account the leniency that they gave Curtis.
Yeah.
You have to.
All right, listen, Saturday, you and I will be there at the Apex. There is PFL Africa Saturday morning, so they are resuming their international work. If you want to catch that on DAZN internationally or the PFL app in the morning, again, I'll continue to stand by.
Is the whole thing going to be on the PFL app?
Whole thing's on the PFL app for folks in the United States.
I do not got that DAZN.
Yeah, no, it does. We can't even catch on DAZN if we wanted to. It's international only.
Okay.
So, yeah, in the beginning, we couldn't even watch here. So now we can catch everything in the United States on the app. So if you want to throw on something maybe while you're getting ready in the morning or having your coffee before we head over to the Apex, I'll continue to shout from the hills that I think what they're doing internationally is the best. The last thing I want to mention real quick, did you see the latest PFL hire?
I saw it. What's his name?
Jamie Pollock.
Yeah.
But it was funny because he worked. So for anybody that doesn't know, Jamie Pollock worked for the USC for years. He was the Senior Vice President of International Development and General Manager of Latin America for the UFC. He oversaw Brazil. He oversaw Mexico, all the expansion. So you and I are around for that. And then I realized, because he just got hired from PFL as the head of Latin America, and I'm like, has his name always been Jaime Pollack? And we just said Jamie Pollack for – because it's not it's J-A-I-M-E.
We always said Jamie.
It's Jamie. But now that I look at it, I always thought it was spelled weird, and I don't know why, it just dawned on me, because everybody called him Jamie back then.
He does not look like a Jaime. He most certainly does not look like a Jaime.
Okay, I'm like, was that? I'm not going to lie to you. When the email came across and I saw the press release, I was like, oh, shit.
Jaime.
I was like, well, first I was like, oh, shit, Jamie's getting back in the business. I was like, cool. And then I was like, wait. Has it been Jaime this whole time? So I just want to throw that out there. I don't know if we were saying it wrong the whole time.
The whole time, and he just let it happen. He's like, my parents have always called me Jaime, but I just didn't want to be the weird white looking dude that goes by Jaime.
That's what I'm wondering. Anyway.
Interesting.
I thought I'd throw that out there. All right, I need that little dose of comedy.
Yeah,
I guess.
Best.
Hopefully everything's good. It's it literally was right before. Right as I was pulling up, my dad, I guess he was having some heart palpitations, and it's more, my stepmom says it's more precautionary than anything, but they're getting them checked out. But yeah, it was a little tough to get on here, and so when my wife hit me up that side, I had successfully blocked it out, and I was like, I can go, I got an hour in me, let's do this, I can put the world on hold for a second and just talk about the world of MMA. And then I got that message of, like, should we tell our son or not? And I, you know, that hit me. So anyway, I appreciate everybody for if you think we might ever edit the show or not live it in real time.
That passed years ago. We stopped doing that years ago. Back when we stopped caring, when it was like, oh, wait, I sound really drunk right there. Yeah. No, that's staying in there.
100%. All right, well, listen, I'm going to go check on my family and let everybody get to it. I know you're going to enjoy an afternoon off, and you got some personal things to tend to. So, yeah, hopefully everybody sends some good thoughts and well wishes. My family's way. I'd appreciate it. And thanks for listening.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.